We want to welcome you back to the Heights Podcast. At Heights Baptist Church, our mission is to love and to lead all people to a new life with Christ. And one of the ways that we do that is by creating content like this podcast, where we examine issues of faith, the culture, and the church. And we like to just figure out ways to help you take your next step of faith on your faith journey. On this season of the podcast, I've enjoyed just getting to know some really awesome guests, both from our church and from our local community. And so today, I would like to welcome to the podcast Alan Larson. Alan, thank you so much for being on the program with me today.
I would say it's my pleasure, but I'll wait till we're done to say that.
That's okay. That's fair. That's fair. Alan, you are on my radar right now just because you are a person who serves the church in a whole lot of different, diverse areas. And so I would love to just talk to you about some of the things, some of the ways that you serve a church, some of the different ministries that you're involved in. But I think before we explore some of those current ministries, why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got started in ministry here at Heights?
Okay. Growing up, I grew up here at Heights, for one thing, but I was now they would call it, basically I was a shy kid that never said a word. I was scared of people and thought I had nothing to offer. After I graduated high school, I was approached by the church and asked if I would be a substitute bus driver for a bus ministry that we had at the time. We picked up about 100 kids every Sunday morning.
100 kids?
100 kids.
Wow.
And had three different buses that ran and had a children's church on Sunday. So I thought, well, I can do that. I can drive a bus. I can do that and not have to talk to very many people, you know, and do something. As soon as I learned the route, though, the regular driver quit showing up.
Oh, that's all. That's how that works sometimes.
Yeah. So it became my route. And then they shared with me that, oh, yeah, as a bus driver, you're supposed to visit the kids on Saturday.
Oh.
And I didn't like talking to people. Mm-hmm. And so fortunately, a real sweet lady named Miss Rosa Newton came alongside me and put her hand on my shoulder and said, well, I'll go with you. And so Miss Rosa taught me how to kind of put words to ministry. And then on Saturday mornings, we would meet together and we would go visit our bus route. We'd visit the families and the kids we picked up. And then if we saw a new swing set in the yard, we would stop and introduce ourselves and see if we could pick up those kids too. And so that was kind of my beginning involvement in ministry and actually doing something. And I served in that ministry for a number of years, and eventually because of state requirements for buses and maintaining them and housing them, it just was no longer possible for us to stay in the bus business.
Mm-hmm.
And so that ministry kind of faded out.
Gotcha.
and went away. About that time, Charles Easley came to this church, and his wife Sherry wanted to revive or begin a young adult ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Which at the time, what would happen is when single people from our church would get married, they would go sit in a class with Brother Ken, and it would be the two of them and Brother Ken in a Bible study, and they would go for a couple of weeks, and then they'd leave and go find a church that had more young married people.
Gotcha.
Because we weren't it.
Gotcha.
Sherry started with about seven people and asked Teresa and I, about the time we were going to get married in 1988, if we would serve as outreach leaders for the young adult department. So we became the face that everybody met. If a young person walked in the door, we met them. And during the time that Sherry was in charge of our young adult ministry, we grew from one class to two classes. And when it grew to two classes, our second teacher was a shift worker for a plant. And so it was one Sunday a month he couldn't teach. And so they asked me if I would fill in there. So here again, the guy that didn't like talking is now teaching a young adult Bible study.
Gotcha.
Then we continued to grow and needed to split again. And then I got my own class and taught. I had the youngest group. So I had the class that was 25 and under.
Okay.
And so eventually we got a ladies class as well, and we had four classes that were solid classes, you know, from 8 to 10 people, most of them, every Sunday morning for people that were probably in their early 30s and younger.
Gotcha.
So it was a big group, and I taught young adults for a long time. Eventually felt that God was calling me out of that, and I sat away for a little bit. about the time that Teresa and I were dealing with some infertility issues.
Gotcha. Okay.
And during that time, I was at a Promise Keepers conference. And while there, the worship was healing for me. But it was an experience where I was with a group of 50 or 60 men from our church, probably 40,000 Christian men in the group, in the building, but I was alone. I felt like I was by myself. Hmm. But worship was healing. And I had no musical experience whatsoever, and God tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You can do this every week." And so I approached our worship minister at the time and said, "Hey, I think I'm going to come visit choir and see how it goes."
Oh, fantastic.
So God placed me in the choir, and eventually I wound up singing on praise team for a number of years. But it was after my daughter joined a youth group that I was convicted that the youth group takes place on Wednesday nights.
Right.
And choir practice takes place on Wednesday nights.
Right, so you can't be two places at once.
Can't be in two places at once. And I felt that the youth, especially the boys, needed to see a man that worshiped. And so I started going over there on Wednesday nights, and I left choir at the time, so that I could hang out and worship with our youth and be an example of a man who sang and worshiped. So,
and I can't tell you how important that is. Like, it's, I was talking about this particular issue with a good worship leader friend of mine in a previous episode, but we talked about how in, particularly in America, singing is, it's one of the only nations where singing is not a male dominated activity. It's a, just because of kind of like culturally and like who the popular stars are and how the music works. And so a lot of times, like men in particular often grow up afraid to sing or are fearful that they can't sing. There's a whole lot of things I could say about that. But what an important thing to be an example in a young person's life to say, like, this is a man who wants to worship God. And one of the ways that we worship is when we sing. So thank you for that. Thank you for being that model for, and we were talking before we turned the cameras on, you've been a part of the student ministry leadership team for about how long now?
Probably 8 to 10 years or so.
8 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And your youngest is in the student ministry now.
Yes.
And he's a sophomore?
Sophomore. Yes, wow. He is. Yep. And when I worship with the youth, I prefer to not stay in the back, that I like to find an empty place amongst them. And it's really cool to not only worship with them, but to listen to them.
Oh, yeah.
And to get to hear their voices and to brag on them. That, man, you sound good today, you know, to encourage them as well while I'm worshiping with them.
Anytime I have the opportunity to go over there and help out leading worship with our student ministry, it is always a blessing to me. I love listening to our students sing. I love listening to them just express and worship. I've led worship in other places where it's not like that, mm-hmm. you know, so it's a very exciting thing to get in a room full of, you know, 30, 40, 50 teenagers, and they're singing and they're engaged and they're dialed in. They're not on their phones. They're not, you know, goofing around. They're worshiping and singing to the Lord. And it's such an exciting thing to be a part of. So you have spent 8 or 10 years helping out in the student ministry, but you also wear another hat on Sunday morning. I think it was the first ministry that you did that where I became aware of you. Of course, when I first came to Heights, I had little ones. Mm-hmm. And so you have been teaching a preschool life group for how long?
Probably about 20 years now.
20 years. And you don't just teach on a rotation. You teach almost every Sunday.
I teach every Sunday that I'm here.
Wow.
I love telling the Bible story and teaching the Bible to kids.
How did you get started doing that?
I got started doing that when my children were little and there was a need. And so I just basically was the guy that was filling in a void. And while filling in that void, just discovered just how much I enjoyed teaching the Bible to our kids and our children. And my main group that I love to teach the most is the pre-K and kindergartners.
Oh, man.
They're sponges. And there's something about what they get from the Bible, what they learn, is what we give them. We as teachers and as parents, what we sow into them is their only understanding, because they can't read at the time that I have them. So they can't feed themselves.
Interesting.
And to me, I liken it to trying to lay a solid foundation. And when I pray for my kids, I pray that we lay a solid foundation upon which that a lifetime of a love commitment to Christ can grow forth from. I know that in a lot of places, you know, the preschool area is considered a woman's place,
right,
a lady's place to serve. It is such a blessing to be back there. These kids, they give more than I give in return. And it's really cool as well to, so at our spring retreat, I got to visit with some kids, in junior high kids. I had a junior high group that were in my class.
Oh, that's amazing.
And some of them, they were telling me their testimony. They were saved when they were 7 years old.
Oh, wow.
That's only a couple of years removed from when I had them, when I felt like I was trying to lay a foundation for them. And it was really affirming, you know, that in this coming Sunday, boy that's 7 years old is going to be baptized.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And he hasn't been out of my class long. And so I don't take credit for those things, but it's just a joy to know that I was a part. I played a small part, you know, in laying that foundation for them.
I love it. You know, when I was growing up in church, the way my church was started, it was a big church. There were multiple services, and so the children's ministry had activities both hours. And so usually the kids didn't necessarily go to big church with their parents. That was the way the church was that I grew up in. And so when I got to be in junior high, my parents served in children's ministry. And so they kind of made a deal with me. They said, you have two options. She's like, you're going to go to Sunday school first hour. They were like, second hour, you can either go to church or you can get plugged into a ministry. They were like, but you don't get to just go hang out at 7-Eleven. You're going to be doing one of those two things. And so I very quickly found myself as a junior higher. I plugged into early childhood education. I walked into the children's ministry department and I said, I want to serve. Where do you have a need? And that's where I ended up. And I ended up serving in early childhood like life group, early childhood Sunday school for a number of years and loved every minute of it. I also had helped out with kids choir and, you know, did some other things too, but it was so fun. And again, it's often that age group is often sort of, it's the domain of ladies that serve. And so there's a rarity of guys that are willing to come in and be good role models and teach the word of God to little ones, mm-hmm. You know, and I love thinking about the fact that like you're saying, like you've got little ones that are getting saved because even as they're young children, they're getting to the point where they're able to comprehend the gospel, you know? And so it's not just story time. It's not just babysitting. Like what we're doing with these kids is speaking the truth of God's word into them.
Absolutely.
So how do you ever feel any kind of like, do you ever feel like a little bit of culture shock when you go from serving one group on the one extreme of the age spectrum over to the other? Like, do you ever like have to like figure out like, okay, am I with pre-K and K or am I over here with teenagers? Like, or is it, if you've been just doing it long enough that it's natural to move between the two worlds?
It's pretty natural to move between the two worlds. And part of that is that my first job that I ever had was training horses.
Okay.
And my wife hates it when I make analogies, but when I compare people to horses. But in a large part, a lot of the principles are the same.
Okay.
Whether the children are small or the children are big or whether it's a horse. The main principle that I believe is that you just have to communicate expectations, and it doesn't matter if they're 4 years old or 16 years old, kids are not going to rise above their expectations. And when we expect them to excel and to learn, they will. My current kids, right now we're in Acts, and they can tell you that that's the fifth book in the New Testament. My pre-K and kindergartners can. They could tell you the books of the gospel in order, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. and they know the axe is next. They're small. But they know that I have, we've gone over that enough. I expect them to know it. And we do. We go over it. If we have a lesson that's in the Gospels, I can tell them that it's in the third book of the Gospel. And they'll go, Matthew, Mark, Luke. It's in Luke.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know? And so they are so much more capable of learning, and they deserve that. They deserve more than babysitting.
Yeah, that's
and
a good point.
And it is not babysitting, you know, when I'm back there. Mm-hmm. And I think that if more men understood that it's not babysitting, it's laying foundations, that perhaps we would have more men serving back there.
I'm curious because, so you've been teaching little ones for 20 years, mm-hmm. and you first started doing it when there was a need. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that over two decades, there have probably been, I mean, I know that there's always a need, but there have probably been years where they had like, where there were like, the needs were more, more extreme than others. Like there were probably years where you could have said, okay, I've, you know, kind of like the bus ministry or like the time that you spent worship ministry. Like sometimes our ministries have a season, but you just have not felt the leading of the Lord that your season there is finished yet.
I have not. I tell people that I teach the greatest life group at Heights Baptist Church.
I love it.
And I believe it. And I believe it's been the greatest life group year after year, not because of me, but because of the people in my class.
That's fine. That's awesome. Tell me a little bit more about horses. Tell me about what you do for a living.
I'm a farrier. I shoe horses for a living. So I do a little bit of blacksmithing, you know, goes along with that. I was 18 years old when I went to horseshoeing school. So I didn't go to college. I went to a trade school, started my business when I was 18 years old. And so at this point, I've been doing it for 39 years, which is a long time. But I enjoy it as well. I have an artistic side to me that's limited, though. And so as a kid, I could reproduce something that I saw on paper as far as a sketch or drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And as a farrier, I get to reproduce in a horseshoe that I build the horse's hoof so that it fits properly.
Got it.
And it goes on safely.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to use my artistic side as well. Like I said, I've been doing it for 39 years. When I went to horseshoeing school, I was told I knew everything I needed to know to make a good living shoeing horses, and I believed it, but I didn't.
Hmm.
So about 6 years in, I discovered that there were things that I needed to know that I didn't, and a good friend came alongside me. We became friends and taught me what needed done to help a particular horse and left me with the stuff to do it next time and told me how much to charge for it and gave me information on a couple of associations, a state association and a national association that exists for continuing education, which is not required in our craft.
Gotcha.
It's strictly voluntary, and I've been actively involved in those ever since. And so it's probably been about 30 years ago. So we have five continuing education events a year, mm-hmm. Three continuing education clinics, and then a competition and a certification. And the continuing education clinics had us away on Sundays a lot.
Oh, gotcha. Or
three times a year. So I thought, well, how can I honor God on these Sundays that I'm gone?
Mm-hmm.
And so I approached the president of the association and said, hey, would you be opposed to me starting a devotional on Sunday mornings? We'll start an hour early before the clinic starts so that it doesn't interfere with regular clinic time. And it was very well received. So for 30 years now, our association has had a devotion. So on Sunday mornings, clinics, we have Bible time and the prayer time and encouraging time for one another. And I've led them for most of those years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wasn't leading, I was arranging other people.
Gotcha.
To do it. So I've had several people that have come alongside me over the years, and we've taken turns. And I even had one guy that I know needed to do it. He was anxious about it. So I told him, I said, well, I'll tell you what, you pray about it. And if God tells you not to do it, I'll accept your no. So he did it.
Oh, man.
Another friend of mine that's currently sharing the load, told me later that it was the first time that he'd ever taught a Bible study lesson was at our clinics. And now he's more actively plugged into his church and serving in ways. So he was someone else that just needed to be prompted a little bit to get out of his box. And he does a great job. And so it's good to see believers in that realm grow as well as a result of our devotion time. And the entire climate of the clinics has changed since this was started.
Oh, no kidding.
Before it started, it was very much our clinics were a place where men would go to get away from their families, where they would plan which bars and inappropriate places they were going to attend. Mm-hmm. And it was very done out in the open. And the next morning, they would talk about what they saw and what they did.
Right.
At this point, it's very much a family-friendly place. The entire atmosphere has changed over the years. There may still be those things go on, but if they do, they're discreet. Nobody talks about it.
Got it.
And it's just changed the whole climate within our within Texas, within our Farrier Association.
That's fantastic. I know. So so our church is located kind of on the kind of southern edge of the Houston metro area. Do you get to are a lot of your clients local, or do you have to travel a lot for work?
All of my clients are local at this point. At one time I traveled to Bernie to a big show horse barn. I would go every other week and stay 2 days at a time. I spent several years doing that. Then that just kind of played out. Going that far, being gone, got old. So I reined it back in. For probably 15 or 20 years, I've been making trips to Katy on Mondays. Mm-hmm. For a long time, it was on Thursdays, but swapped to Mondays. And I've recently stopped going to those accounts to rein things in, to be closer to home, and to save on the wear and tear on myself and my body and my vehicles and everything else. So I've kind of reined things back in. So at this point, all my work is within probably 30 minutes of home.
Gotcha.
And I travel from barn to barn and have a mobile shop and a trailer that I pull from barn to barn.
Gotcha. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Heights Podcast. Join us next week as we continue this conversation with Alan Larson. We worship every Sunday at our Alvin campus on the south side of the Houston metro area. We have worship services at 10:30 a.m. with life groups for all ages at 9 a.m. We also live stream to Facebook and YouTube. Be sure to follow and subscribe for more content from our church. And if you'd like to learn more about Heights Baptist Church, you can visit our website at heightschurch.org.